Welcome to the May 16, 2014 Drupalize Me podcast. Drupalize Me. Oakley dokely, good neighbors. So today we have some interesting guests with us. Because I gotta, you know, I'm trying to like shake it up in terms of what I say to introduce my guests. I am Addison Berry, and I have with me today Will Hetherington, who is the technical manager at Netro Media.
Hi there.
And then we also have Ben Chevet.
Hello.
And Joe Schindler.
Hello.
Who are both from Lullabop. And, well, Drupalize Me, you know, it's that whole, like, anyway. I'm not going to get off on a rabbit trail there. Today's podcast is going to be about the acronym CDN, Content Distribution Networks. It's bandied about a lot. You see it all over the place. People talk about, you know, do stuff like in the cloud, on the web, and deliver things to places and fast. But what does that all actually mean and how does that work? Why would you use it? And then we'll talk a little bit also just in particular about like Drupal sites and CDNs. But really we want to kind of get into the meat of what is a CDN and how do you actually use them effectively? So that's what these fine gents are going to talk about with me. But before we do that, of course, we're going to do our standard release announcement, events, fun things like that. For video releases, we just finished up the Mapping with Leaflet series. So this is, there's a bunch of different ways that you can make maps in Drupal. And Amber just did a whole series on using Leaflet, which is a pretty cool, straightforward way to like kind of bang out a map. So that just finished up. And then next week, we're going to be coming back to the using Drupal book which we have like a series of series with, and next week will be chapter 5, which is building a review site that has Amazon and 5-star in it. So a little kind of step-by-step how to build this site. In terms of events, I only have two things listed, but one of them is going to take a little while, so have a little patience. But the first one is DevZiner, which is going to be in Portland, Oregon, next weekend, May 23rd, 24th. And it's a conference for developers and designers specifically to come together and share information. So I think it sounds like a really fascinating event. And it's been organized by a lot of people who are well-known in the Drupal community out there in Portland. But it's not a Drupal conference. This is about the tools that developers, web developers and designers are using out there and how to share that information with each other. So, and I know Drupalize Me's Amber Matz is going to be speaking at that event. And Lullabot is a bronze sponsor. So check that out if you're in the Portland area. And then, of course, we have DrupalCon Austin, our big Drupal event for the summer. And that's June 2nd through 5th. The second being the Monday before the conference starts, which includes some extra fun, cool things. It's in Austin, Texas, if you haven't heard about it yet. And Drupalize Me is a bronze sponsor, and Lullabot's a platinum sponsor. So we're going to be like all kinds of boothin' and all over the place. We have a lot going on at DrupalCon. And so I'll give you the quick rundown of where you can find us, other than at our booths. Starting off, we have a workshop on the Monday, on June 2nd, which is breaking down component-based web design. And the early bird just ended for this, sorry, like 2 weeks ago. But it is filling up pretty fast at this point. So if you want to try and get in, you only have like 2 weeks, to sign up, and we're almost full. So you should definitely go check that out if you are interested in that. I'll give you the quick synopsis of it. Basically, we're going to be looking at front-end development processes and sort of what's going on today in keeping up with the modern stuff in terms of getting things done. And so we're going to be looking at component-based front-end stuff as well as playing around with things like SAS and Compass and really breaking it apart and seeing how you get all of these pieces to fit together to actually make a responsive website at the end of the day. Joe can probably speak to it a little bit more because Joe's going to be teaching that course along with Amber and Kyle. And then also on the Monday, I'm actually going to be at the Community Summit, which is why I'll not be in the workshop. But we started the Community Summit up in Prague last year, and so we're bringing it to the North American Con, and I'm pretty excited about that. Been working with the DA. And so that's a Community Summit's a pretty awesome opportunity to come together and not just talk about community stuff, but actually work on things together as a community and making how we function as a group work better. And then during the conference, Joe, you are speaking, correct?
Correct. I actually have two presentations. One on Tuesday that's about sort of like project management from the perspective of a developer, and one on Thursday that's about the form API in Drupal 8.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Woo. And then, of course, there are lots of other bots who are speaking as well. So I'm not going to try and list them all here. Wednesday is the Lullabot party. We always have a really huge DrupalCon party, and this year it's going to be Wednesday night at the Handle Bar. See, it's a bar. Anyway, so check that out. We'll have more information about that as we get closer to DrupalCon. And then to wrap things up, at the end of the week on Friday, we're going to be doing the Get Involved with Core workshop as part of the Get Involved with Core sprints. Friday is all day sprinting. So even if you don't attend DrupalCon, you're in the area and you want to come hang out with Drupal people, work on things, and learn a whole lot of stuff, then Friday is your day to just sort of to show up and find out what's going on with the sprints. And if you don't know what's going on, we have this workshop for the first half of the day on Friday on how to get involved and how to get your local laptop set up with all the tools you need in order to be able to contribute effectively. So we have a lot of stuff. We're going to be all over the place. So if you are at DrupalCon, please come and say hi, chat with us. Okay. That's a whole lot about DrupalCon. Let's move on to CDNs. And to just set the stage, let's start off with a nice classic simple question of what is a content distribution network?
I think there's a couple of ways to answer that question, or a few probably. But in essence, a content delivery network is a distributed setup of servers that serve content. And I guess that's a fairly generic thing to say, but if you have a web server that's delivering assets, you're probably going to have, in a CDN situation, that same thing, but distributed across an internal network, also with links to the open internet. Content distribution networks generally allow for decent bandwidth management so that you know what you're getting across a network at any point in time. But really, it is a distributed network of servers in data centers that simply serve content, generally under the same ownership.
Typically, they're geographically distributed, right? So it's like servers that are placed in various locations throughout the world, rather than a bunch of servers in a single data center, but they're distributed. And I think that's part of the whole like distribution network part of it. Is that a true statement that like in all cases you would have distributed servers all over the place, or would you have a CDN where it's just a couple of servers in the same data center?
Well, yeah, I think that's the interesting part of the question, is that you can, a CDN could be your ISP, for example, like Comcast delivering cable services is generally done over their IP network. And so that's a content distribution network in North America, if you will. Mm-hmm. So yes, it generally means geographically distributed though, but that can be in a localized area like North America as opposed to globally.
And not to complicate things, but geographically, I mean, is easy for us to kind of comprehend because, it's space and we know how that works. But what really matters is locality on the network. So, yeah, you could have two servers sitting right next to each other in Iraq, but they're essentially at opposite ends of the internet because they're on different routes, different subnets. So,
whoa.
I'm just going to let that one sink in a little bit.
Yeah. The internet's crazy, dude.
But typically, they are geographically distributed because for like fault tolerance. Because if a data center blows up, you don't want all of your servers to blow up with it. So it's typically geographically distributed for that reason.
And then there's the like the locality part of it that you were talking about, where it kind of is, you know, geographic distribution versus where is this thing on the internet. And part of what you're getting with a CDN is a server that is closer to you, so a fewer number of hops that you have to make in order to access the content. Maybe it's still really far away geographically, but in terms of, you know, the way that the computers are talking to one another, it's actually closer to you.
Exactly. So like, yeah, to kind of expand on that, like a single fiber optic cable from Seattle to New York would be faster as far as hops than a server sitting next door that has to go through a bunch of routers.
But how, well, so I don't want to go too far down this, but I'm really curious about this because where are those things? Like, what is that infrastructure? Like, how do you know where something is on the internet compared to something else? Like,
that's a really interesting question. So I guess we could talk a little bit about how, a determination is made as to where somebody should receive content from. So let's say you're hosting some content on your CDN and a user connects from South Africa. Now, depending on the CDN, because there's a few different ways to do this, for example, Amazon, they have a service called Route 53 and it's a latency-based service. So they actually have two CDNs, you know, their Route 53 services on a separate network. And so it measures the time it takes for data packets to travel from the connecting machine and back again, and measures that against the array of servers they have on their CDN. So they'll literally give you the fastest path. It may not be geographically closest, and that's often how those determinations are made, is literally by somebody looking at a map and saying, well, you know, we're probably going to get throughput in these spots. But the other way to do that is this kind of latency-based load balancing, or distribution, rather.
I've seen an interesting site. It's I can't find it at the moment, but it's called Greg's Cable Map, and it shows a Google map with an overlay of all of the different underseas cables, and it's been interesting for me to look at that and kind of get a sense of if you were routing geographically, like say, you know, you're in Australia and what's the kind of closest fast thing to get to from there. That was an interesting thing to look at, but that kind of is the physical proximity versus the latency, which are I guess is another way of doing that routing for a CDN, is saying, you know, when somebody connects to the network, look up based on their IP address where in the world they're located, and attempt to route them to a server that is physically closer to them. And then in theory, you're getting a better throughput because there's less hops.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah, I find that, I don't know. It's like, so like, is what's controlling like this, the speed though, like, so part of it's like location, like how long it takes to get from one point to another, right? But like, we were talking about like this, like how many hops there are and like how many sort of points you have to go through, how many routers you have to go through. Does that affect things? Like not just the having to pass through it, but like what if there's a crappy router in the midst of that that doesn't put things through, or does that not really come into play as much?
That's definitely a big problem, or certainly a busy router in your chain of hops. You know, if you think about it as driving on some road somewhere, you know, a traffic analogy is generally quite a good one. And you're crossing a bunch of intersections, and then all of a sudden you come to an intersection where it's completely backed up and you can't pass your vehicle through there. You know, that's effectively what happens when you have a really like an overloaded router on the route that you're on. So it's just continually dropping packets. And so you don't get the content at the rate you should because in the TCP world anyway, there's constant retransmissions going on and lots of chatter, and you just can't sustain the rate that you need to get the content you want. So definitely busy routers can have a big effect there on the effectiveness at which you get content delivered.
Yeah, and to take that traffic analogy one step farther, what often can happen is if you come up across that intersection that's really busy, you might just backtrack to the last intersection and take another route, which is what the internet likes to do.
So we're talking about, like, you know, there's all these servers all over and they're all connected on the internets. And you're trying to get a piece of content from one of those servers to somebody, some computer somewhere, the fastest way possible, right? But what controls that? Like, what is determining, I'm going to use this server and this path to get that versus that server and that path? Like, how does that work?
That's a network protocol called the IGRP, mostly, I think. It's best path determination, if you will. So you have a bunch of routers that all chat to each other and pick an elected leader, and it will say, okay, I know where things are busy, and so push traffic this way or that way. And then again, you know, different networks will do things slightly differently, but in essence, it's a routing protocol that makes those decisions.
So is this something like that the internet does magically, or is this something that if you set up a CDN, you need to install software or set up or configure something to do that for you?
That's kind of magically done by the internet, if you will.
I love it that it happens.
It does that part of it. At least, yep. Now, you can obviously you can set static routes yourself, and that's quite a common practice if you know, you own a network or you're running a network, and you need to put traffic in a very specific way for any reason.
So when we're talking about CDNs, I mean, I think, you know, at least like for me, I'm most familiar with CDNs in terms of, you know, like you can pay somebody to essentially be your CDN and do things, you know, like Amazon. Is this the kind of thing that I'm obviously people build CDNs, but like, is this the kind of thing that people, that your average person out there just trying to, you know, wants to use a CDN, like, is this the kind of thing that I could build myself for my own sites and that would make sense? Or is this the kind of thing that you really should, you know, pay somebody who knows what they're doing and managing all of this stuff for you, kind of a thing?
You would probably be best off paying somebody, unless you had the resources like Google or Facebook would have to actually build something like this yourself.
Gotcha. Okay. So there are other people who build these networks and then make them available. But there are lots of
them. As like a you know, the average person is not going to have access to hardware that is in nearly as many places as somewhere as like Google or Facebook or Akamai. Like, just the concept of, you know, I'm going to have a server in every country in the world is kind of mind boggling.
Right. So, but there are lots of different CDNs out there. Like, you just mentioned a couple. So is it like, so they set those up, and then if I want to use a CDN, I need to assess and pick one? Or like, are some of them, they just use them for themselves? They don't sell them to the public? Or, you know, like as the average, you know, person out here who's like, oh, I want to use a CDN to make things faster for my users or whatever, like, how do I go about even evaluating or figuring that out?
I think that's a good question. There's there's lots of ways to answer that one too. You know, there are, you know, you asked about kind of private or non-public CDNs, and yeah, there's obviously lots of those in existence, you know, known or not known by people. You know, there's lots of universities around the world that collaborate and have a large CDN that is available to research groups. And, you know, they do all kinds of work on there. But generally, yeah, you know, if you're going to go and take a look at using a CDN for some reason, then, you know, some evaluation is definitely a sensible thing to do. You want to know, you know, the ability of the people you're going to engage to do their job. So,
So why would I use a CDN? Like, I understand, like, it's a distributed network that delivers content, and theoretically it's, you know, delivering content faster to people, I guess, because it's spread out. But, like, what are the actual use cases? Like, what are examples of this is a good place or time to use a CDN versus the overhead of spreading that stuff out isn't worth it?
I think, you know, static assets often is a good idea to have on your CDN. So if you're serving, you know, lots of web developers will know this, that, you know, Google and many other companies provide CDN versions of certain libraries, like jQuery, for example, really popular JavaScript library. Mm-hmm. And that makes things infinitely easier for the web developer. You know, you can have a web server somewhere that's only sending a few kilobytes of data, which is, you know, maybe the HTML, and then all the images and JavaScript and any other static assets that don't change or maybe not read from a database, you know, they can be served from a CDN, which may mean lower bandwidth costs for you. Definitely it's going to probably provide a better user experience because it will be faster. You know, a lot of people's concern today is speed. And, you know, a second or just half a second makes a real big difference in your end user's experience. So using a CDN certainly helps to bolster that.
Another big use case is kind of like protection for your server, because say you get on a popular news site, Reddit or Slashdot, if that's a thing anymore, or you know, something else that basically generates just tons and tons and tons of traffic, and you just have this one little server because usually you serve a few thousand hits a day, but now you're trying to serve, you know, a couple million in this hour. The CDN will pick up that load so your server doesn't melt.
Got you. So. Well, and so we use a CDN for Drupalize Me. Why?
Well, that's a good question, Addy. And, you know, this is one of the things about CDNs that's important. When you're talking about content being served, Drupalize Me, it's video content in this instance. So obviously, sending video content over the internet is lots more in terms of the actual data being transferred. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not a little 12 kilobyte JavaScript file. It's, you know, maybe a 40 or 400 megabyte video file. And so that content all needs to arrive at the rate it needs for playback. And so a CDN is really important in that equation, because if you don't have the bandwidth available, which when you're dealing with things like video, you know, you are not going to be able to sustain large data volumes over lots and lots of hops on a network. So you want to be as close to the end user as possible to be able to deliver that effectively.
Otherwise, you can like really easily end up with like a low latency connection, which we see a lot. And we're always trying to optimize with our CDN for Drupalize Me, is that, you know, if you're in New Zealand and you want to view one of our videos, and if you had to get that video content from, say, the US East Coast, that's a lot of hops, and it's also a really long distance. And even with like fiber and all of that, like that distance adds up, and it creates a longer amount of time for your computer and the server to talk to one another. And we're always trying to like reduce that latency to create a better experience. And so something like ours, where you know, we've got streaming video, you can tell if you've got a low latency connection like a high latency, meaning that it's the traffic is a bit slower because the video might start to stutter. It's like the network is having trouble keeping up with delivering the video content to you as fast as your computer needs it in order to play back that content. And so for us, it's all about trying to get those files closer to you, not necessarily geographically, but close on a closer server, so that we can just reduce the amount of time between you and watching the video.
Cool. So how does that, can someone walk through, like, how does it like work though? So like I have a website, say Drupalize Me, we have videos. We upload the video, like we want the video on our website so that people can see it on our website. So how is my content on a CDN and like appearing properly on my website? Like, but how does that process work on the backside?
I think there's a couple of different ways that that works. You can have like a, what we have, our CDN, we have to push the content out to the individual servers. So part of the process when we, you know, add a new video to the site is after it gets encoded, we need to run some scripts that synchronize that video out mm-hmm. to all of the edge nodes on the our CDN. So we're pushing the content. There's also CDNs, like for example, CloudFront, I think is a good example of this, where it's a pull based, and it's when somebody requests the file from your, so drupalize.me/image.jpg, it requests that file. The request is routed through CloudFront initially, and CloudFront says, oh, I don't have a copy of this file yet. Let me grab a copy of the file, synchronize it out to the CloudFront server, and then serve it to the user that requested it. But now there's a cached version of it on CloudFront, and it'll stay there as long as it can, basically, depending on your cache header configuration and how you've set that kind of stuff up. Those are the two that I know of. There may be others as well.
Right. So pretty much we have like sort of our base server, as it were. Like we upload it to a place first, like a particular server. Mm-hmm. And then we, from there, we push it out to all of the others. How does our website know like what's going on though? Like how does that connect up to, how does it know which video it's playing, I guess, if that makes sense as a question?
Like all the other questions, there are a couple of ways to do that. So let's take the two scenarios that Joe talked about. Magic, I don't know. So if you're using the push style like Drupalize Me does, where you actually manually push all your videos out to your edge nodes, what you probably have is like a separate domain, like and I'm making this up because I don't really know how Drupalize Me does it, but something like videos.drupalize.me as like a subdomain. Mm-hmm. And then that subdomain could point to the CDN, whereas the main site, drupalize.me, just goes directly to your web server. And then, so your website can just generate the links with that subdomain, and then it just magically links up.
Yeah, that's exactly what we do. And so we use a service called Edge Director for the domain name routing. And so you go to videos.drupalize.me/name of video. And it first points to the Edge Director server, which then says, okay, you're looking for this particular video. You're coming from this particular IP address. I'm going to do some look up to kind of figure out where you are in the world, and then based on the routing that we've got set up, it selects the appropriate server to get the video from.
Gotcha. So basically in our website we have a link that's displaying, or the video player is saying, I'm using this asset, this video that's out there, but that is sort of obfuscated a bit, in the sense like there's like a, it's just hitting something that's just going to feed it. I'll give you the right one when you need it. But precisely, you don't need to know like the exact
everybody
address.
Gets the same URL, and then the setup that we have kind of does some magic and calculates based on where you're coming from which server that URL should actually point at.
And then the other way to finish that thought is if you have just kind of the path through like the CloudFront, is that it's kind of magic, I guess. So what you do is you set your main DNS entry, so like drupalize.me, to point at CloudFront. So when anybody goes to your site, it goes to CloudFront. And then CloudFront says, I either have this content and I serve it to you directly, or I need to go back to the main server and get it before I serve it to you.
Gotcha.
Okay. And so that's one of the things that's always interesting then when dealing with Drupal, right? With something like CloudFront or Akamai, the request comes through Akamai, goes to Drupal. Drupal serves the page up, and then Akamai caches it. But then let's say an editor goes and changes the content of the page. But now that the content of that page or that image or whatever the file is, you know, distributed on all of these servers all around the world. And you've got this basically like cache invalidation problem where you have to be able to tell all of those instances that this file is no longer valid and you need to request a new version of it, basically. Right. So I don't have a ton of experience with that aspect of it in Drupal or in general. Like, what are some of the common ways to deal with that?
A couple ways again. One is that you can have like a cache timeout or an age, max age on your content. So when your CDN gets a piece of content, it knows, okay, I can cache this and serve this up for X number of minutes, say 10 minutes or an hour or whatever. And then after that timeout happens, it knows that the next request that it gets, it needs to go back and get a fresh copy. And you can tweak that a little bit. If you have a fairly busy site that changes fairly regularly, you could probably get away with like a 5 or 10 minute cache timeout. If you have a site that doesn't change often, like maybe once a week, you could set your cache timeout to 24 hours or 2 days. But then you just have to know that if you change something, it's not going to show up to the public for up to 2 days. The other way is as many CDNs give you an API call that you can give them to basically say, hey, I have a new copy of this file. I need you to delete what you have now and get a new copy.
Right. To actually actively communicate and say, hey, swap this thing you have for me.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
There's one thing I'd like to come back to real quick about the media caches, and that's part of the reason DrupalizeMe CDN is built the way it is with video content. If you have particularly large files, for example, and you know you're using a media cache style setup with your CDN, where requests at an edge node go back to the main server and they have to pull content from said main server, you can end up with a less than ideal end user experience if they have to sit and wait for the content to come back from that main server if it's a large file, depending on a few other variables, but that can really have an effect.
Oh, because you have to wait for the time that it takes for the file to transfer from the source to the edge server, right. And now you got to wait again for the time it takes for it to transfer from the edge server to your computer. So
that's correct. Yeah. Yep. When we're talking about streaming video, it's a little bit different. You know, you can kind of start that up a little earlier in that process on the edge node. You know, you don't have to wait for full file transfer, but certainly from the master server out to the edges, generally that's required. So just something to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. So this is something people use all over the web for all kinds of things. But is there anything particular that makes it weird to use this with a Drupal site, or is this just like anything else that you do? I have a URL for some things and I just put it in there somewhere.
That's pretty much the case, Eddie. I mean,
yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious.
Yeah, that really is it though. It's kind of the really nice thing about DNS, I guess, and how that syncs up with a CDN that, yeah, you know, you just have an asset that is being called from a remote location, and you know that could be really coming from anywhere depending on whether or not there's a CDN in place.
Right. So essentially you're just using a remote URL for whatever that thing is, instead of, you know, something that's local to your server, essentially. And your website just doesn't really care. It's like there's either an image at this URL or there's not. And that's all I got to work with here.
Well, your website cares because it's not doing nearly as much work anymore because it serves the file once and then the CDN caches it. And, you know, for the next X amount of time, 24 hours or whatever that's configured to, you know, that content is served from the CDN and people aren't hitting your Drupal site to get the content. So it's happy because it's doing less work.
Right. Fair enough. Cool. Well, I think that's a really good overview of things. We should probably start winding things down. Do you guys have anything else that you wanted to be like, ooh, must share?
Yeah, I do, actually. So we're talking about like offloading all of this this workload off to your CDN. One side effect that a lot of people don't consider is that really affects your web logs and traffic analysis if you use your web logs to do that. Because now, instead of all of these users coming directly to your server, so you get an accurate view of this is how many hits I have on, these are the URLs they're going to. Now, to your server, all of this traffic is coming from a handful of servers, and it's not very much because they're handling all of the main load. So you need to do one of two things: either add like a Google Analytics type thing where you have some JavaScript on your page to actually gather all of that information, or oftentimes a CDN will give you access, at least to some degree, of some stats and metrics to give you an overview of what that looks like, because you definitely lose that on your server.
Right. Yeah, you end up basically with, you need to get the stats from the CDN because you don't have those stats directly anymore.
Exactly. So,
yeah. Cool. Fair point. Joe, Will, you guys have any other last words of wisdom?
I'm chewing. I think, CDNs, it's a really wide-ranging conversation. I think, interestingly, to touch on something in the media recently, Netflix now paying for a peering agreement onto Comcast's network, that's kind of part of the wild and crazy CDN conversation. I think, everything we've discussed today up until this point is, a good overview of CDNs, but that side of the internet, shall we say, is in flux constantly, and so it's going to be a really interesting year, I think, to see what's going to happen in terms of net neutrality and the way that networks may change. I mean, people have been paying for peering agreements since the beginning of the internet. It's just being well publicized now, so and people are a little angry about it. Last couple of days, seen a couple of JavaScript libraries popping up called slowlane.js, I think, which is supposed to simulate what may happen if we end up with a fast lane and a slow lane type situation, which I think is, that's a really interesting conversation that's not really pertinent to CDN discussion so much, but it's kind of in the realm. So,
yeah, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything further, though.
Cool. Well, thanks a lot for that overview. I know kind of bits and pieces that float up from when Joe's like trying to explain things, but this is just a really nice overview of things. I feel like I have a little bit better handle. Although, and I have to agree, though, I've seen that map. We'll put a link in the podcast notes to that.
It's cablemap.info.
Ah, okay, cool. Cablemap.info. So cool to look at. That is so neat.
Yeah, and it's almost important to know you want to turn off the future cables because they're on by default. It's a little checkbox at the bottom of the page.
Okay.
But that'll show you,
you can tell Will spends a lot of time with this map.
I just find it wild to look at that map and go like, oh, that's why it's really slow to connect to the internet from that part of the world, because there's no cables that go there. Got it.
Yeah.
No, there's no, that's not a definitive map of everything that exists, because there's all sorts, but right. It's definitely, it's an educational tool. I think it gives people a bit of an idea of how some of that stuff functions.
Well, and also just the vastness of the infrastructure that's in place to support the internet and content delivery and all of that is kind of a wild thing to try to understand.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think most people spend much time thinking about how they are seeing what they see on their web browser or how something's getting delivered to them, when that server's not sitting in their house. So it's like, well, how are you seeing that? And yeah, that map is just like, whoa, dude, there's like these cables that run under the oceans. And it's like, that's crazy. Like it isn't actually magic. It might be magical, but it isn't literally magic that makes it all work. So it's fascinating to actually see the sort of an x-ray of the skeleton, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool.
I think, yeah, one thing that's interesting to take that the tiniest bit further is, you know, lots of CDNs, you know, they'll often provide their own internal map like that as well. You know, level three are fairly transparent in that respect, where they'll actually show, you know, where all of their cable lies, and you know, some providers will even go to lengths to show you, you know, what load may be on certain spots. Another really interesting site actually that's kind of useful, at least for North America, is internetpulse.net, and so that's like a map of peering points where different networks meet other networks, and there's exchange of traffic.
Cool.
And it will show you how much traffic is being, you know, what the latency is in that cross linkage, and then also if there's packet loss as well, where data is just disappearing. It's a real handy one to spot check if you're getting a specific problem in an area and you want to take a quick peek and see where what might be affecting it. That can be a helpful tool.
It's like a little traffic report where the traffic jams are.
Yeah, that's almost exactly what it is. That's a really good analogy, Addy.
You know, just had to circle back. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, guys. I really appreciate you coming on and explainifying this stuff. And I'm sure I'll be talking with all of you guys very soon. For listeners, if you guys have questions about this, of course, as always, you can always leave a comment on the podcast page. But you can also get in touch with us, questions about this podcast, ideas for other topics you would love to hear on the podcast. Through various channels, you can get to us on Twitter at twitter.com/DrupalizeMe. Facebook, same thing, facebook.com/DrupalizeMe. We also have a contact form on our website. So if you go to drupalize.me, you can hit the contact form there and send us an email, and we'll get back to you and, you know, let you know what's going on. So happy CDNifying things, people. Hope you guys enjoyed this one, and we'll talk to you next time. See ya!